So in this text, Kaivalya Upanishad, which is exclusively devoted to the subject of meditation. And that's why it's a very appropriate text for this particular class. So in the first few verses, the teacher tells us about the technique of meditation, the importance of meditation, the benefits. And now the teacher is taking us inward, because we are so used to seeing the world outside. With the eyes we see, with the ears we hear, with the mind we think, feel emotions, with the intellect we think thoughts. And so we are all the time running into the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. And even when we sit for meditation, our mind and intellect are running out into the world. You know, or what am I going to do after meditation? Or what happened yesterday? And all the time, we are so used to looking outside. In the Upanishad, it says, Paranchi khani vyatrinat swayambhu tasmat parayan prashyatin antaratman. He says, the Lord, the Creator, made our sense organs to look outside. Our eyes to see, the ears to hear, nose to smell, skin to touch, tongue to taste, the mind to feel, the intellect to think what is happening outside. And so all the time we are engaged. And in that process, we get attached to certain things and we get bound, and then we, and a lot of the problems occur because we're always looking outside for happiness, always looking for happiness in the next object or the next wife or the next person. And whatever we possess in this world can never give us permanent happiness. It may give us happiness for a while. We buy a new house, you know, after a while it's good, and then after a while the problems start of the house. New marriage, in the beginning, there's so much love, and then, you know, problems start. A new child, he gives you a lot of love till he becomes a teenager, and then then every problem starts. So nothing in this world gives us permanent joy. So they say, if you want permanent joy, look within. And so today we will start this journey of looking within. The rest of these verses of this Upanishad, from 14 onwards, all the way to the end, talk about the self, the consciousness within. And if the ideas seem a little difficult or obscure, they will be repeated in different ways, because the teacher also knows that as students, we sometimes, these ideas are difficult to grasp. So, you know, be patient, because they will be repeated with different emphasis throughout this beautiful Upanishad. So we'll do verse number 14, page 53. Punashcha janmantar karma yogat mantar karma yogat sa eva jiva swapiti prabuddhah puratraye kridati yascha jivah puratraye kridati yascha jivah Tatastu jatam sakalam vichitram adharam anandamakhanda bodham yasmin layam yati puratrayam cha. So last time, before Christmas, the verse number 12 and 13, we had talked about the three cities, three puras, three cities where the individual lives, where the individual we live. One is the waking state, and it says, Saeva maya parimohitatma sharira masthaya karoti sarvam striyanna panadi vichitra bhogaihi saeva jagrat. So this individual being lives in this waking world. And in this waking world, I enjoy wine and women and wealth and all those things. Then I go to sleep. And in the dream state, I create my own world of joys and sorrows. Some happy dreams, some sad dreams, some horror dreams. And then in the deep sleep, I have neither the waking nor the dream, but I have no experience. So this one individual is apparently living in three different cities. the waking world, the dream world, and the deep sleep world. But is it one, or are there three different individuals? We all know it is one, but who is it that is living in these three worlds? Let us pay attention to that. So it says that this person, having gone to sleep, then he wakes up. Obviously, you know, you sleep 6 hours, 7 hours, and then you wake up in the morning. So punascha janmantara karma yoga. So punah, again, cha, this individual, punajarma yogat, karma yogat means the vasanas. Due to the vasanas, due to the tendencies of previous births, sa eva jivaha, this same individual, swapiti prabuddha, dreams and wakes up. So we know that, in deep sleep, then I come to a state of dream where I start dreaming something and then I eventually wake up. That's generally what happens, unless somebody rudely wakes you up. Otherwise, you know, you gradually wake up. And same thing when you go to sleep, you know, they have this awake and there's the REM sleep and then the deep sleep. So it's a gradual process. And puratraye kridati yascha jivaha. And this individual, this individual puratraye, in three cities it plays. As we said, there are three cities, waking, dream and deep sleep. And this same individual plays in the three cities. Cities, and from that consciousness, jatam sakalam vichitram, this beautiful, phenomenal world, this wonderful world arises from that one consciousness. And that we know, that God alone was, and from him emerged this whole universe. So that is the consciousness. And what is the nature of this individuality, which we call as Om? You can call it Brahman, you can call it Jesus, you can call it Allah, Buddha, Krishna. But that consciousness within me, and that is the consciousness in all plants, birds, animals, fish, all humans, there is only one God, only one consciousness. We may give it different names. We may call it Allah or Father in Heaven or Krishna, but there is only one. And what is the nature of that consciousness? Adharam, it is the substratum, it is the support. Akhanda anandam, and it is unbroken joy, and it is unbroken knowledge, consciousness, bodham. And this whole universe merges, yasmin layam yati puratrayam cha. So this whole universe arises from that one consciousness that we call God. And then when there is a pralaya, when there is the end of the universe, the Bible talks about it, the Upanishads talk, that one time, this whole universe will end and will merge. Even science talks about it, that all these stars will finish, you know, they will burn out and they will become big black holes. You know, they talk about black holes, which are dead stars. Ultimately, all the stars will be dead and the universe will become a giant black hole. Everything will end. So let us now talk about some of the points that we covered in this. So it says he wakes up, why? Because of the vasanas. You say, no, I don't wake up because of the vasanas. I wake up because I'm hungry. Or I wake up because maybe I need to go to the restroom. But the rishis say that behind all waking are your vasanas, your tendencies, your desires. How do we prove that? Swamiji in his commentary talks very beautifully. He says, suppose I have to catch a flight at 6 o'clock in the morning. So what do I have to do? I have to wake up at 4 o'clock, get ready quickly, and by 4:30 reach the airport hour and a half or 2 hours early to catch my flight at 6. Now I have to wake up at 4 and I set the alarm, but whole night I'm worried. You know, how about if the alarm doesn't work? How about if the phone battery dies? You know, how about if the power goes? So we have all these worries. And so no matter how confident I am, I'll still wake up at 12 o'clock. I'll check the phone. Oh, it's only 12. Then 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Why? Because I have this tendency, this worry that if I don't make the flight, then what will happen? I have this important business meeting and so on. So what wakes us is our desires, our tendencies. That's why a person, you know, wanting to, when he has to go to work on a weekday, he wakes up very early, you know, 5 o'clock. Because he has to be at work at 6. But if it's a weekend, I don't have to go to work. So he's the same hunger, the same thing is there, but he can sleep till 8, 9. Why? I have nothing to do. I have nowhere to go. So the persons may sleep more. So what wakes us is our desires, our tendencies, which takes me to work. So who is that entity that lives in these three worlds? They might say it is the ego. You know, I, Anil, I was a waker, then I became a dreamer, then I became a deep sleeper. But if it was, then I should be the same in all three states. Anil may be there in the waking state, but in the dream state, I may imagine myself to be somebody else. I may imagine myself to be a king, and instead of a gastroenterologist, I'm a king, or I'm a beggar, or I'm a, you know, actor. You know, all those things, whatever I thought about, and I really wanted to be an actor, but I couldn't. I ended up becoming a doctor. But in my dream, I'll start acting in some movie. And so then where is that ego? That ego that was the gastroenterologist is no longer there in the dream state. And in the deep sleep, of course, I have no idea who I am. Whether I'm a man or a woman, whether I'm rich or poor, whether I'm young or old, the deep sleep is the same. That's why a beggar sleeping on the sidewalk, a homeless man, or a king sleeping in the palace, in the deep sleep, they are the same. There is no difference in the joy experienced by the homeless as opposed to the king. So the one entity is the witness. So that's who is the witness? The witness, they say, is not the ego. It's not the individual. It's not Anil or not Jigisha or not Sanjay. But it is that Om. That consciousness is there at all times. That's why even I'm aware of my waking state. I'm aware that at this moment I'm talking and all of you are listening. And then in the dream, I'm creating my own world of experiences and joys and sorrows. But I'm aware because I remember my dream in the morning. Who remembers? It is this consciousness that makes me remember. And how about the deep sleep? Even in the deep sleep, the consciousness, Bhagwan, Lord, is functioning through us. That's why my digestive system, even though I'm deep sleep, I don't need to say, oh, you know, I need to stay awake so I can digest my dinner. No, I comfortably go to sleep and the Lord keeps digesting. My heart is beating, my lungs are breathing, my, you know, bone marrow is functioning. So my whole body continues to function even though I'm in deep sleep because of the Lord. So they say that turn your attention from the experiencing to the experiencer. Who is the one that is experiencing these three states? Who is the one that is the permanent witness? That is very important. So what they are doing is taking us within. Why? Because this is a subjective science. Until now, most of the sciences you study, whether it's chemistry or physics or mathematics or biology, it's all objective. It talks about the world. Chemistry talks about the chemicals. Biology talks about plants. Zoology talks about animals. But Vedanta or spirituality talks about the subject, the me, the knower. And unless you know that, the world will never give you permanent joy. Talking about witness reminds me of a little story. There was this line at the bank teller. And so the guy in the front suddenly takes out a gun and shows the teller, give me all the money you have in your drawer, you know, and she gets panicked and she tries to press the button to call the police. The security guard is outside. He doesn't see. The moment she tries to press the button, he shoots her. She falls down dead. So then he turns around at the man behind him. Did you see me shoot the teller? He said, yes, I did. He shoots him too. And there's a woman behind him. He tells her, did you see me shoot the teller? She said, no, I didn't, but my husband did. So the witness is always there. In all situations, the witness is there. The witnessing consciousness is aware of what is happening, knows what is happening, remembers what is happening. So that is called a witness. A witness is one who is not involved in the situation but knows what is happening and remembers. That's why when there is a accident, you know, then there might be a guy on the sidewalk. He'll say, I saw this guy, you know, beat the red light and then he hit the other guy who was coming through the green light. So this person is not involved. He's not related to any of the two drivers, but he or she has seen the incident, remembers the incident, and is able to comment upon it. So that the witness that remembers these three states is Lord or consciousness or Brahman. So the attention should be shifted from the objects to the subject, the knower, the experiencer. And that is the source of all. And we have talked many times, even all the scriptures say that God alone was. God here is indicated by Om. And from that emerged this whole universe. He alone was there, or she alone. God actually is neither male nor female. It is the energy or the substratum. And from that came this whole universe. So that was the source. And ultimately everything merges back into it. The example is gold. You know, from gold, you know, we make all these beautiful ornaments, necklace and bangle and earring and so on. And then when you get tired of this necklace, oh, it's an old style, you know, I don't need this. I want a more modern. Then you take it to the jeweler, and then especially in India, it's very common. They take it to the jeweler. He'll weigh the gold and then give you credit for that much gold, and then he will melt it. And then you give him, show him the style, and he'll make a new ornament based on your size. So the ornament came from gold, is sustained by gold, right? Ornament is nothing but gold and gold. And then when it is melted, it merges back into that gold. And it is of the, it is the substratum, it is the support. Just as the gold is the support of all the ornaments, mud is the support of all the parts. So this consciousness called God alone expresses as all this. Everything is that and that alone. That one has to understand. But in our ignorance, we think, you know, this is, he is different from her. And that is Hindu, that is Muslim, that is Christian, that is my friend, that is my enemy. So we create these disturbances, but a saint sees oneness in all, because the saint has experienced that God's presence. And that is the difference between the wise person and us, because we see the variety, he sees the oneness. A wise person sees the oneness. That is called Advaita. Advaita is that there are no two. There is one consciousness alone. But what happens is that on that consciousness we project, even though this chair is God and cup is God and everything is that God alone expressing in names and forms, but we give the differences because we don't see that. Otherwise, everything is an expression. All you have to do is look up, look out in the morning. I try sometime to practice that exercise. I wake up early morning and I go out and I open my eyes and then I see God everywhere. If you can, you see in the sky these beautiful stars and the moon. Nowadays, of course, it's cloudy, but you even see the beautiful clouds and the rain and the trees and the swimming pool and the everything is that. Just see that one. It's different expressions. You know, so in the tree, it is different. In the birds that are chirping in the morning, it is different. In the sun rising, it is different. In the rock or in the pool or in the patio, it is that same. Expressing differently. Just you open your eyes and you see that oneness. You see that silence in space. You see that how many trillions of miles it is going. How many stars and all is that. That alone. The moment you start seeing that, that becomes meditation. You don't need to sit and chant Om and Om. You see God everywhere, and that is meditation. That is the beauty of this universe. That is the beauty of this knowledge. Once we have this knowledge, it is very easy. Of course, not that I have reached or anything like that, but there are moments of clarity when this knowledge hits you. Yes, everything is that. There is nothing except Him. Even the good, the bad, the ugly, everybody is that one. And that is bliss. The moment you experience that oneness, you get total bliss. Otherwise, we have sorrow. You know, this person is giving me problems, that person. But the moment I say, I am that consciousness, and I'm playing the role of Anil or Sanjay or whatever role I have been given, Julie, whatever name, form, then the sorrows are to the body, to the mind, to the intellect. They are not to me, because I am that consciousness. That is my true nature. I'm playing this part. So I play the part just as an actor, Dilip Kumar or Charlton Heston or some famous actor. In one movie, he's a king, and then the second movie, he's a beggar, and the third movie, he's an alcoholic, and he gets beaten by the world. Well, he's not affected. He said, these are all roles I'm playing. He doesn't become miserable when he gets a beggar's role, and doesn't become happy when he gets a king's role. And these are all roles I'm playing. They're not me. So a wise person says that these are all roles I am playing. I am at this moment playing a role of a speaker. Then I'll go to my office tomorrow. I'll play the role of a doctor. And then I meet my children. I'll play the role of a father or husband or whatever roles I'm playing. I play, but they are all roles. They are not me. The moment you say that and understand that and experience that, then you go beyond sorrows. That is called bliss. That is called anand. And then such a person remains unaffected by what is happening. The example they give is of the movie screen. Now the movie screen, you know, is white and it's huge, and on that screen the movie is projected. Now suppose there was no screen, there was nothing, and they projected it on empty space, you wouldn't see the movie, right? To see the movie, you have to have a white screen. The screen cannot be colorful, cannot be black. It has to be white so the movie you can see on it. Now in the movie, 1 week, there is a movie of floods. You know, water, floods, floods. The whole city gets flooded. Now after the movie ends, does the screen get wet? No, screen remains white, unblemished. The second week, the movies of fire. You know, there was a movie of draft called Backdraft or something. And so much fire and firemen and, you know, people dying and the buildings collapsing and everything. But when the movie ends, the screen does not get black. With the fire, screen remains the same, white, unaffected. Third, there's a movie of killing. You know, there's war and blood and people dying. You know. Movie ends, the screen is still white. It doesn't become red with the blood. So the movie supports, the screen supports all the movies, but the screen itself is unaffected. Without the screen, you would not be able to see the movie. So this consciousness, the Brahman, the Lord, supports all of us. Everything is supported. But he or she or that consciousness is not affected by what is happening. You say, well, you know, that's not good. There is so much killing and so much murder. Shouldn't God be sad? So God will say, yeah, there is killing and murder on one side, but there is birth on the other. Should I be happy about a new one being born, or should I be unhappy about somebody dying? But that is the nature of the world. Should God be happy about somebody getting married, or should God be unhappy about somebody getting divorced? Or it should be other way around. Should he be unhappy about somebody getting married, or should be happy about somebody? So the world is full of changes, ups and downs, joys and sorrows, success and failure. He just watches. He says, okay, everything is happening because of the karmas. And the reason all this is happening, because human beings have been given a choice. See, animals don't have a choice. Birds don't have a choice. Plants don't have a choice. Plants just grow. Birds fly. Animals hunt. You know, they do. But human beings have been given a choice of doing good or bad, and all the sorrows are caused by human action. If you look at it, we have destroyed the planet. You know, we are now creating global warming. Then we have all the wars and the killing. All that is human doing. So that consciousness, which is unbroken means God, the consciousness never sleeps. Even though I go into deep sleep, the Lord within me never sleeps. It is unbroken consciousness, bliss, and this whole universe that came out of that consciousness merges back into that consciousness. Just as Waves come out of the ocean, stay for a while and merge back into it. Gold comes up, ornaments come out, again merge back into it. So this consciousness, Brahman, who is the knower of everything, it is because of this consciousness that at this moment I am able to see. With the body, I am able to perceive the objects. With the mind, I am able to feel the emotions. With the intellect, I am able to think the thoughts. Why? Because I am alive, because Lord or consciousness is present. So this verse tells us very beautifully that in meditation, pay attention to who knows, who is the knower, who is the substratum, who is the support, and turn your attention from objects to the subject. And ultimately, the understanding should be that I am that spirit, I am that consciousness playing this role, and play it like a role. Do the best you can. We're not saying that, you know, if you are a pharmacist, be the best pharmacist. If you're a housewife, be the best housewife. If you're an engineer or a doctor, be the best you can be. But remember that it is a role that I'm playing. And when time comes, okay, my life is over, I drop the role and move on. Take on another role, maybe some other body or some other. And so constantly the attention should be on the spirit, on the consciousness, on the Brahman. And that's what we do in meditation also. We quieten the mind and turn the mind's attention inward to the inner consciousness, the bliss, the unbroken consciousness, which is the support of all beings and is the permanent witness. So be a witness. So even when you are working in the world, be a witness. If you are doing the dishes, instead of saying, why do I have to do the dishes? Why such a hassle? Be a witness. Say, okay, I'm watching the person doing the dishes. Then immediately that becomes a meditation. I'm watching the person vacuuming. Or I try to practice when I'm on the treadmill. I do walk on the treadmill at least 2-3 times a week. And I try to pay attention that I am watching the person walking on the treadmill. In my presence, this body is walking on the treadmill. So that kind of a repetitive, otherwise it's very boring. So when you're on the treadmill, you put on the TV or listen to some music. You can do that, or you can just turn the attention to who knows the walker. So then that 30 minutes becomes a mini meditation. Attention doesn't all the time stay, but at least part of the time, or when you're, you know, anything you're doing that is repetitive or that is boring, instead of saying it is boring, just say, oh, okay, let me watch. Who is the one that is? So when you do that, then your mind is always attentive to the Lord within, the knower, which is my true nature. And this idea will be repeated again and again in the subsequent verses with different focus. The teacher will repeat it so that it becomes permanent in our head. It's like hammering, you know, the nail, you keep on hammering till it goes deep and then it cannot be pulled out. So the teacher will repeatedly hammer these ideas so they become fixed in our head. It's a very, very beautiful verse. I hope there are some questions or comments.
Nobody's going to give you outside like the joy or sorrow or something. Whatever you just like, you know.
True. Not only that, but as you go inward, you will experience a very unique kind of joy, which they call as anand or bliss, which is not joy due to an object. It is joy from within. And I think those of you who meditate regularly, when the mind becomes still, at least at times I have that experience that waves of joy arise, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, there should be no reason. But happiness comes. Why? Because you are in touch with that inner self. And then nothing else can disturb you. That's why Jesus could be crucified. That's why, you know, all these, you know, great saints, you know, they were, you know, some of these saints were, the Muslims, you know, killed them. They put them behind walls. They did all kinds of torture. Sant Gyaneshwar, Mirabai, all these saints, you know, suffered so much, you know, problems at the hand of evil people, but they were unaffected. Why? Because they had become one with God. And so then the world cannot touch them. That's why he can say, forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. Because he was one with the Father. He said, I am that Father. So nobody can, you can kill my body, but you cannot kill me. So that understanding comes. And that is called permanent joy. Because joy in objects, A, is temporary, B, is limited. Like say I eat a chocolate, I get a joy. Okay, one chocolate. So if I get two chocolates, the joy is doubled. But if I get four chocolates, maybe a little better. If I get 10 chocolates and I eat them all, it becomes misery. And then if I eat 20 chocolates, I should have 20 times the joy, right? No, I have 20 times the misery. I feel like throwing up. Why? Because if the joy was in the object, then it should keep multiplying when the objects multiply. But it doesn't happen because the joy is objective. But when you discover joy within, then nobody can take that from you. Nobody can affect you. That is the joy. That is called the subjective joy. That's called anand or bliss. In the book, they call it anand. Here we translate as bliss. One is pleasure. Pleasure is when I eat a pizza slice or when I have an ice cream or when I buy a new jewelry or a dress. That's called pleasure, which is temporary. But the bliss is joy within. So that is the difference between external joy and internal joy. Thank you.
How can you be vasana-less and become one
right.
Internal? Right. And it just seems like a very far-fetched goal.
Right. Well, if it was far-fetched goal, then there wouldn't be so many realized masters. See, so many masters have experienced it. You know, then and there are a lot of people who are on the path. And as many people as are in business, but there are a large number of people who are involved in spirituality also, who are meditating, studying, teaching, practicing. And they must be getting some joy out of it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be. Otherwise, why would they get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, put the alarm and sit? Unless there was some benefit or some joy. Because without benefit, nobody does. Even the Upanishad, it says that without gain, even a foolish person doesn't do anything. So for what about this wise person or saint? Why is he doing that? So there has to be some joy, some benefit in the spiritual path. That's number one. Number two, your question was, who leaves the body? Now the body gets burnt or, you know, cremated or buried or, you know, whatever happens. So the body, it gets destroyed. Body gets destroyed. This consciousness or Atma or Brahman or Lord is everywhere. Everywhere. So there is no place where God is not. Like he's here in this pointer. He's here in the book. He's here in the cup. He's here in him. In the chair. He's there everywhere. So there is no place for God to go. So when I die, it's not that God goes away somewhere. God is still there, was there, is there, will be there. So the body perishes. God or consciousness. In fact, they say that's one thing I can do that God cannot do. There's only one thing I can do that God cannot do. You know what is that? I can change my address. I can move from Bakersfield to San Luis Obispo, you know, and buy a house on the beach, but God cannot because he's already there. I can only move from where I am to where I am not, but he is everywhere, so there is no place for him to move. So that's just a joke. But anyway, so the consciousness has nowhere to go. The body, of course, gets destroyed, is burnt or buried. What goes is called the subtle body, called the mind and intellect. The subtle body, propelled by the vasanas, propelled by the desires, and propelled by the karmas, by the actions. Based on my actions and based on my desires, this subtle body called mind and intellect, which is also called as jiva, the individuality. And actually that distinguishes me from all of us. The body, we all have the same human body, you know, the same five elements, you know, the air, space, fire, water, earth. I mean, there are small differences, of course, young and old, short and tall, black and white, male and female. But essentially, we all have the same human body, the liver and pancreas and kidney and brain. We all have that. Animals, all dogs are pretty much the same. They may be small dog, big dog, but they're all the same. All birds are the same, all fish. So the bodies are the same, the consciousness is also the same. It's not that the consciousness in the tree is different from the consciousness in the bird or the consciousness. The consciousness, it is the same. It is the equipment that decides whether a person will become a bird if he has the wings. If he has gills, he'll become a fish. If he has roots, he'll become a plant. So depending on the equipment, the differences are there. So the consciousness is the same, the body is the same. What is different is mind and intellect. Like my emotions are different from your emotions. My ideas are different from your ideas. My vasanas, my tendencies are different from your tendencies. Each one of us has, even the husband and wife, even twins. Now they have different emotions, they have different ideas, they have different tendencies. Two children born to the same parents, you know, one becomes a musician and has no interest. Another one becomes a scientist, PhD in, you know, computer. And a third one becomes a quantum physicist. And a third, fourth one becomes a bum and a drug addict and does nothing. So four children from the same parent. One is a musician, one is an, you know, scientist, one is a great engineer, and fourth one is a drug addict. So how did that happen? The parents were the same. They gave the same love, the same upbringing. Why did it happen? Because of the tendencies. So what distinguishes me from you is my subtle body, the mind and intellect and the vasanas. So based on my vasanas and based on my karmas, my actions, this individual after death will go to heaven or hell based on good or bad deeds. And then after my deeds are exhausted, after my good deeds are exhausted, I leave heaven, or after my bad deeds I have suffered, I leave hell, and then I continue my journey and take up another human body based on my karmas. If I have done good deeds in this life, then I'll get a good body in the next life, healthy body in a good home. But if I have been horrible and abusive and, you know, done a lot of bad deeds and murders, then obviously I will not only suffer in this life, maybe I might get put in jail, or I will suffer in hell for, you know, thousands of years. And then my next life also will be full of sorrow. So that is what leaves. What leaves is this mind and intellect called the subtle body, which takes up, they also call it shuttle body, because it shuttles. From one body to another body it goes. And how do I become vasana-less? As we have talked many times, vasanas are created by my selfish deeds. The more selfish actions I do, just for me, myself and I, the more I strengthen the vasanas. So if you want to reduce the vasanas, start doing things that are unselfish. You know, do things devoted to others. Like now they're doing so much work for sickle cell. Now this is a very beautiful way to help the world and reduce my selfishness, where I'm sharing what I have with the world. So as I serve the world, slowly my selfishness reduces. My tendencies become purer. My vasanas become pure. Instead of selfish vasanas, I get unselfish desires, where I have a desire to serve the world. So with the body, I serve the world. With the mind, I love. I love God and I love all beings. Total unconditional love, not love somebody because I can get something. Then it becomes conditioned, then it becomes a business. I love you so that you may give me security, you may give me money. Then it becomes conditional love. Unconditional love is where I love a person regardless of what that person does for me. So total love for God and for all beings, service, and with the intellect, having this right knowledge, reading books like these, slowly it reduces your vasanas. And the goal of life is to reduce vasanas. That's why if you look in the life of saints, they have minimum desires. They have nothing. There's Guru Swami Tejomayananda, who is the worldwide head of Chinmaya Mission. I mean, he has 300 centers. I mean, the budget of the mission is probably, if you count, you know, all the projects that are going on, it's probably millions of dollars. You know, he's like a CEO of a company that has 300 branches all over the world. And that budget, I'm sure, is several million dollars. And he's the worldwide head. And he lives literally in a small room. If you go to Mumbai, to his, where he, the place he lives in the mission, it's two small rooms. One is where he sleeps and one is where he meets. It's about the size of the room we have here for our, and what does his possessions are? A bag, a simple bag. He has 4 or 5 pairs of clothes. That's all. And now he has a laptop. Previously he didn't even have a computer, but now he carries a little computer so he can do some of his mailing and all. That's all, a watch, and that's all his possession, a fountain pen. And that, he has nothing. He does not have a single property to his name. He doesn't have a penny in the bank account. There is no bank account that says Swami Tejomayananda. Nothing. Everything he has belongs to the mission. So that is called living vasana-less, where he is the CEO of a corp of 300 branches of several $1 million budget, but he has a 0 pennies in his account. Nothing he keeps for himself. So that is, look at all these great saints. What kind of bank balance did Jesus have, or Buddha had, or Narsimha Mehta? He was so poor, Narsimha Mehta, and you know, look at Tukaram. They were all very poor because they had no desire for the world. They said, I want God. Mirabai, she was the queen, but she gave up everything for Krishna. Mere to giridhar Gopal, dusra na koi. She didn't care for the palace or the husband or the father-in-law or the kingdom, nothing. I just used to just go to the temple and dance. That is called vasana-less. So it can be achieved, but one has to make a conscious effort.
Then
they become one with God. Then they are not born again.
They are not born again.
Because they have no vasanas. They have no selfish desires. What brings us back is vasanas. That's what made us all take birth again. So the goal through this knowledge is to reduce the vasanas. So through service, serve the world, love the world and love God, and get the right knowledge. And through meditation is the fastest way to burn vasanas. When you sit and meditate, in deep meditation, your vasanas get burned. So regular meditation must be done every day by everybody. At least half an hour, and maybe on weekends even an hour. So through regular meditation and through these three things, service, serve with my body, love with my mind, know with my intellect, you will reduce the vasanas. And once the vasanas become less, then you are that. It's only reason I don't know that is because I have too many vasanas. But in reality, all of us are Krishna. All of us are Jesus. All of us are Buddha. All of us are that divinity. But we don't know it because of the vasanas. So it's not going anywhere. It's not that one fine day sitting in meditation, suddenly a light will shine and I'll be a realized master. It's nothing like that. It is a slow process of cleaning your mind. Even Guru Swami Tejomayananda Ji, his main point was purify the mind. Purify, purify, purify. Again and again they say, what is the impurity of the mind? The vasanas, anger, greed, jealousy, hatred. So reduce them. Reduce anger, reduce greed, reduce jealousy. Share with others. Help the world. Do more. And fill, I was listening to somebody today and they were telling, suppose I say anger, greed, hatred, what happens? Your body becomes tense, violence, murder. But if I say love, compassion, sharing, kindness, the words, I'm still speaking, but how does your body, doesn't it change? When I say love or when I say sharing, or kindness, or on the other hand. So words have a very powerful effect on us. So practice love, practice kindness, practice compassion, practice sharing, because your body reacts to everything that is happening in your mind. The mind and body are very closely connected. So the more you practice these good values, your mind will become pure. As you share, as you love, as you help the world, the mind will become purer, and in that pure mind, the Lord will shine. The Lord is there in every one of us, but it is covered by the dirt of ignorance. As you purify the dirt, the Lord will shine. It's not that God is more in the saint and he's less in the criminal. He's there equally, but he's shining in the saint and he's not shining in the criminal because of the vasanas. I hope it answered your question. I know it was a long answer, but I think it was a long question too.
Right.
So.
Right.
Thank you. Anything else? read this verse again, please. Go home and read it. And also these talks he will be putting on internet. firstpower.info. Listen to them again, because with repeated listening, it gets clearer. So we'll turn the attention to the witnessing consciousness. We'll talk about that today. Back erect, but not stiff. Eyes closed. Soft smile on the lips. Meditation is a joyful activity. Consciously relax your body from head to toe. Start from the head and relax each part of the body, the neck, the shoulders, and so on. And when you reach the toes, then slowly move back up to the head. And relax each part. The body is relaxed. Now pay attention to your breath. Take a deep breath in and mentally chant Om as you move up. Breathe out. Breath in and chant Om as you breathe out mentally. Keep doing deep breaths and chanting Om. Keep your attention on the breath and nothing else. As the mind becomes still with breathing, turn your attention to who knows. Who knows this body? Who knows this breath? Who knows this mind and its thoughts? It is the consciousness. And that is my real nature. I am of the nature of consciousness. I am the immortal spirit. Stay with that idea for a few minutes and be a witness of the body, the breath, the thoughts. Even if the mind is running, just watch the running of the thoughts. And ask yourself, who knows these thoughts? Let us stay with that idea for a few minutes.